Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
Oh, and I'm Richard Munchkin.
The first part of our show, we're going to be with gaming attorney Bob Nersessian. Bob Nersessian, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Always a pleasure. It's been a long time.
At least 5 minutes.
Are there any different rules that we should know about when gambling in U.S. territories such as Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, or Guam?
As far as I know, no, and you miss the casinos in the Marianas.
I'll have to rewrite our listener who posted this. Right. I will scold them horribly.
You know, I would probably err on the side of caution. Like, if I were coming back from Guam and I had more than $10,000, I would probably try to declare it, even though it's the United States and you shouldn't have to, but...
That's the Fiore case.
Right. Puerto Rico.
And they did declare it, and they still took the money. Okay.
Okay. A player was playing craps at a Colorado casino. Ended up winning $7,000. Did not want to show ID. The casino would only cash out $1,000 without showing ID. So he cashed out $1,000, came back and the next day, cashed out another $1,000, played some more, won some more, tried to use the chips at the craps table, but they wouldn't even let him use those chips without showing ID. He had heard that Colorado had a $3,000 limit that you could cash without showing ID. This casino was only letting him do $1,000. He's afraid next time he tries to cash out, he might be trespassed. What would you suggest he do?
Okay, I have no idea what Colorado's laws are on what you have to report. For instance, Nevada used to have state laws that required it. We no longer do. I can give you an answer for Nevada if it's if Colorado is analogous. They have you over a barrel because they have your money and you have your driver's license. You can push it and you can get a hold of the gaming commission and have them come in and show them the regulation, which likely exists, that says that the casino has a duty to promptly pay chips when presented. Does not say promptly pay on provision of ID. It says promptly pay. And get the commission to say, give him his money. What do you think you're doing?
In reality, the commission is going to say, okay, we can do this. First, give us your ID, and then they're going to show it to the casino.
In Nevada, that's not the case. If you ask them not to tell the casino who you are.
I've had friends certainly where that's exactly what the gaming guy did.
I know they do that. You have to tell them don't.
Huh.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought they did, but
yeah. All right. Well, there are two cases in the country today that already exist where the cop paid a lot of money to the patron for handing the patron's ID over to the casino.
Oh, wow. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah. Well, look at this. He's a cop, right? Which amendment is it? I think it's the... All persons are to be secure in their persons, properties, papers, personal effects. Do you hear papers in there? That's your flipping driver's license, okay? If a cop has possession of your driver's license and hands it to the casino, isn't that a direct violation, an indisputable violation of your constitutional right to be secure in your papers?
Sounds like it to me.
Yeah, and it is. And cops get held liable for that, and they don't get it. The only way they're ever going to get it is if we all keep telling them you can't do that. And you know what? If you're in that situation and the cop says, I'm going to give them my ID, You let them know they're violating your constitutional rights to be secure in your papers. That'll raise a little bit of a hackle on the back of their neck. And I'll bet you, at least some of the time, you're going to get a cop that goes, damn, I almost messed up. Mm. Okay? I've looked at police officers, told them things right out of the Constitution. They have classes in this. They forget it because they don't use it day to day. But I got pulled over and said, why'd you pull me over? Or she says, let me see your ID. I said, why'd you pull me over? She goes, you have a temporary tag on your car. I said, yeah. She goes, well, that appears suspicious to me. I go, I'll wait for you to explain how that's suspicious. And in the meantime, no, you can't have my ID. I was released with an apology. And you know what? She went away thinking to herself, what the hell's wrong with me? I can't just do that to people.
Wow. She's one of the rare cases, I think, that...
Most of us would be well advised not to say anything to these to the officers.
If you don't want to show your ID, you better tell them no and tell them why. Because if you don't, you are going to be in handcuffs sitting in the back of a Ford Grand Victoria.
Whatever it is. Okay. Different casino. Different question. Have you represented any baccarat players who have been backed off for winning too much? And is there any recourse?
Yes, no.
Okay.
Yes, you have. And no, there's no recourse.
Right. They can throw you out of the whole casino without a reason. How are you going to have recourse if they just tell you, we don't want you to play blackjack?
Baccarat in this case.
Or baccarat, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I say this repeatedly. If you win too much money, it does not matter what game you are playing. They're going to throw you out. So.
And sometimes kick your ass.
Well, yeah. Yeah. At least if they do that, there's a case, but.
Different question. A player is a good player. He got flyered in Biloxi.
That sounds like a movie.
What he thinks happened. A casino was offering a promotion where he gets, if he suggests somebody comes in and they come in giving him as a referral, he gets the equivalent of their slot club points for a month. The people who he invited in played a whole lot under a promotion. So he ended up getting just a whole mess of points. The casino kicked him out on the basis of he was manipulating slot club points. He feels he wasn't. They were playing with their money. He didn't tell
them
to do
it. Are we really asking this same question again?
What? We asked this before?
No. Can they do this? They can throw you out for any or no reason.
Okay. But then they flyered him.
Oh.
Does he have a recourse?
If they lie in the flyer, sure.
What about the money he was supposed to get?
Go to the commission, whatever state you're in, and those have value. And if they're denying him his comp points, fight it and get your get the value of your comp points. With one exception that I know of, the commissions generally will do that. We have a current hearing examiner in the Southern Division of Nevada, though, that thinks the casinos can steal points.
Whether they can or not, they do.
If they do lie on the flyer, if they say he was a cheater, okay, or if they say he's a money launderer or something like that.
They manipulated slot club points, is what they said.
Okay. That... May, if it injured him, that is not what you'd call defamation per se, because it does not impute criminality necessarily, but it would be defamation. And if it injured him in his livelihood or property, he would have an action for that if it is false. I don't know what the words mean. He's got to prove that they have a real meaning to a jury of whoever, however many people, and that he isn't somebody who falls within the category of that real meaning. And if he does that, yeah, it's actionable.
All right.
Pretty high hill.
High hill. Civil forfeiture laws. There have been some saying, as a ruling early in 2019, that the civil forfeiture laws are changing. How does that affect APs who drive a lot in northern Arizona on Highway 40 or elsewhere?
It hasn't yet.
So it is...
First of all, I think what he's talking about was the announcement by the Attorney General of the United States that the feds were reevaluating their forfeiture laws and did actually give out some directives making some changes. That does nothing to the Arizona forfeiture laws. What we need are some federal judges or state judges who have the cojones to say, yes, you're a very powerful state, but you know what? People are entitled to due process and equal protection, and the way you're enforcing these laws, they aren't getting them, so you can't enforce these laws. But we don't have judges who do that, because the same way as the police and everyone else, that money goes to them. Okay? The money that goes into the forfeiture concept, the forfeiture programs, generally gets returned to the prosecutors and the police. And part of that is also, no doubt, goes to the decoration and amenities around a given judge sitting in a given courtroom. I hate to say it, but a lot of these judges would rather have three or four Wyatts on the wall than that innocent guy not losing his $240,000. I don't get to work here anymore.
What do you mean?
I'm throwing down with the system.
Oh, I see.
I'm part of the system.
If, let's say you have a, you owe somebody $6,000, and you take a marker at a casino for $7,000, gamble a little bit, leave the casino, and pay off this debt that you owe. Is there anything illegal about that?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. I mean,
You still owe the money to the casino. Yeah. You have to pay
And can you imagine a casino going, you can't spend anything that you take out on the marker until you lose it all to us? Because that's the only alternative to what you're talking about. No, you can't take our marker money and go buy that diamond ring at our in-house jewelry store for your hot little chica on your waist. Of course you can. And they want you to.
I've had situations where I took out a marker and played, left the casino playing somewhere else first, and then came back and played. And they were very upset about that when I took the marker and left the casino.
Oh, I'll bet they're upset, but the marker has its terms. And if it's an instant call marker and you haven't negotiated that different, while you're walking out the door, they may be sending that marker to your bank.
No, this was a 30-day marker.
I'm saying, yeah, I understand.
Do chips from a London casino count as currency?
I don't think so, but I don't know for sure.
Okay.
You're talking about when you declare when you're coming into the United States?
Yes.
Okay. Why are you bringing British chips into the United States?
I don't know. I did not ask this question to the person who sent it in.
Can anybody come up with a hypothetical reason that isn't money laundering?
The what?
That isn't money laundering? If you're going back and forth a lot, why don't you... Yeah, I don't know. Never mind.
Yeah.
Fine. I don't think it is, but I think you're just inviting...
It's not a negotiable instrument, right?
It is a representative of value owed to you by a third person, and it is an instrument. It is not necessarily a negotiable instrument.
Okay, so if I go to Canada and you write me a check for $20,000...
It is arguably a bearer instrument.
Ah, okay.
This is a question, and this is something that I do and have done and have not had problems with it, and players say they have had problems at other casinos. So let's say he's playing a video poker game where he gets a lot of hand pays, where this casino pays in cash. They don't pay in tickets or let the credit stay on the machine. In order to minimize the downtime, while I'm playing, I'm feeding $100 bills into an adjacent machine up to, say, $2,000. And then I put that in my pocket. When I run out of money on the current machine, I put this $2,000 ticket into the machine. I have done this many times, but some casinos think that's money laundering. As far as you know, Bob Narcissian, is there any problem with this?
No, but, sorry for the but, you're going to put me back on my horse. What the hell is money laundering? You know what it is? It is literally anything that the agent of the government wants to say it is if he wants to put you in jail. There are so many different definitions to it. I think in the Pister case, they were arguing money laundering because he was moving. They were arguing suspicion of money laundering because he was taking cash out of one pocket and putting it into a different pocket.
Jesus.
Okay. You're getting my drift, right? The idea is money laundering has been drafted with holes a mile wide that you could drive those moving trucks that you see in mines that have 30-foot tires on them. You could drive them through those holes. They haven't put together a statute with any meaningful limitations. So any prosecutor can look at any money laundering statute, and if he sees anything going anywhere, he can argue it's money laundering. The chips, they can argue it's money laundering. I don't know how to get around this. We really screwed the pooch when we allowed whatever Congress this was. I believe it was under Nixon to encroach upon money being a free and open means of exchange for all debts, public and private. Remember, it says private right there on it. But you can't use money for all debts, public and private, because they have now enacted these money laundering statutes, which turns your private money into dirty money. They erase the front of the dollar bill. So I don't think it is. I can't get in the mind of a prosecutor, but you got to be doing something else dirty before they're going to go that route. It falls into the same category as the CTRs. It's a catch-all to throw in if they don't like you for some reason.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, last week when you were on, Bob Narcissian, you had such elegant vocabulary and so many highfalutin words, and this week we're down to screwed the pooch. So I'm just wondering where we're going here.
Are you saying that screwed the pooch at the same time that I can use nonplussed in a sentence does not show a breadth of vocabulary?
That's one word for it, I guess. Okay. A player's concern when he bets $700 on a blackjack machine wins. So the machine says $1,400. But it was only a $700 win as far as he's concerned, because he had the $700, we'll call it an ante, which isn't quite the right word. So he wants to know why this
isn't
is
that his buy-in?
Yeah, it's his bet. Right. And so in video poker, you get exactly $1,200. You get the W2G, even though it cost you however many dollars it did to do it. So your win is actually less than $1,200, but you get the W2G for $1,200. There are players who argue all the time, this is no fair, I didn't win $1,200. But do they have any recourse?
You file your 1040. You attach your W-2Gs. You attach a schedule to each W-2G that you dispute. You explain your reasons for disputing it and how it is not, quote, income from any source derived, since it is a return of your own money. And you pray that the IRS doesn't want to take you to court because they're afraid you might win. And maybe you'll get away with it. I'm not telling you to do that. I'm telling you to wager less and avoid W-2Gs.
Okay. Somebody wants to know if he's in violation of the device law by texting a friend to say, the shoe is hot, come over now.
No. And that's a wild ass guess. But why? Well,
it's an educated wild ass guess.
Wait a minute. Actually, he might actually know that the shoe is hot.
No, he assuming yeah. He's counting.
He's counting. Okay.
He's counting, and he knows that the shoe is hot, but he's communicating to somebody.
But you know that they zoom in and read your text. Why wouldn't you just send a text that says, Mom, right? I mean, you could come up with a very simple signal that doesn't say, you know, the shoe is
the
hot.
The way you guys are describing it, yes, you're using a device.
Yeah.
That violates the device law.
Have you ever heard of a case like that being prosecuted?
No.
Okay. If it were...
Will be now.
If it were prosecuted, would you take the case and jump up and down in the courtroom and scream?
No.
It's not a case you want.
I don't take... Let's see.
Okay.
Okay. To the extent that I do criminal law, okay... It's limited to misdemeanors where people aren't... I have two very important rules. Remember earlier when I said I'm 12-0? Mm-hmm. My two rules are, one, it's not a felony, and two, you're innocent. Okay? My clients aren't going to jail. I do not personally have the constitution to defend somebody who ends up eating... slop food and has a new boyfriend because I didn't do as good as I could.
So if I get arrested for murder, I should call another attorney.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a referral, criminal, but right? God, no. All right. The only thing I might do that way. No.
This is going to be good.
I have toyed with volunteering on capital cases.
That could be emotionally tough.
Yeah, but you see, I love tilting at windmills. You guys know that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, is that like screwing the pooch? Is tilting at windmills closer to screwing the pooch, or...
No, that's a literary reference, yeah. So or, you get extra points for that one.
Yeah, knowing about Cervantes is pretty cool. The, trying to throw it back at you.
You did it in spades, man.
In Spain, did you say? All right. So
no,
we
I'm not really laughing at that. No, that's a stretch. I'll moan.
All right. So since you tilted windmills and Richard has to go to a meeting, we want to thank you very much for being here with us again. Always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much, Bob Nersessian. Thank you, Richard.
Well, we're going to continue on and answer some emails. But thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
We just enjoyed listening to Bob Nersessian. The rest of the show is going to be Bob and Richard stories, are answering your questions. Before we do that, this seems like a good time for commercials. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. We're taping this episode before we know what the October promotions will be. One thing we're pretty sure of, however, is that for about 10 days in December, everything you buy with your accumulated points will be half price. That means it makes sense to accumulate them and save them before the fact. The NFR rodeo will end on December 14th, and with 3,000 horse stalls at the casino, that's a pretty big thing. But between December 15th and December 24th, usually everything is half off if you use your points. Week 5, of the video poker class, October 1st, 9-5 super double bonus. It's a 99.69% game. Super double is a variation of double bonus, where the difference in the is that for four jacks, queens, and kings, you get a payout of 600 coins instead of the standard 250. They make up for this by lower returns for the flush and the straight. This will be the only game we teach this semester where the straight, where the flush pays 5 for 1, 25 coins. That has several effects on the strategy. There are other games as well. This is the only one we're going to teach. So one of the advantages to coming to this class is you learn how to adjust the strategy when there's different levels of the pay schedule. Classes are free. Everyone is welcome. They're held in the Silverado Lounge starting at noon. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. We are still awaiting some details, but in the very near future, videopoker.com will introduce a pro training membership that will be a few dollars more a month than their Gold membership. Compared to other trainers, this will include all of the pay schedules for Ultimate X, Triple Play, and 5 Play. With correction, you can enter any hand with a multiplier level, and also Quick Quads. I should have more details on this product by our next broadcast. We've decided to add a new segment to our show, and that is interesting things that Richard and or me have discovered in the past week or two, and we'll just pass them on 3 or 4 or 5 minutes of just these things that we think are cool. Some will be related to gambling, some won't, and we're going to start this today.
We'll call it Recommended.
Recommended. So what I want to talk about and recommend it is a new book I just finished. It's called Story Worthy, which is two words, by Matthew Dix, D-I-C-K-S. As he says in his one of his stories, as in multiple penises. I have been active in storytelling for some time. I thought I was pretty good about it. Somebody recommended this book to Richard, who in turn recommended it to me, and I absolutely love it. It is what I have learned so much from it, including exercises to help you come up with a lot of things about stories. There's one thing they call homework for life, where he recommends you spend 5 minutes every day for the rest of your life doing it. I have been doing about half the time. I started about a month ago, and so I'm averaging probably every other day. But this is writing down briefly something interesting or that happened today. Or it can be interesting in a good way or interesting in a bad way. It can be something that when you read the few lines, you will instantly go back to where your emotions were when that happened. So if you keep this list going for a while, you will have lots of potential subjects for stories. And becoming a better storyteller has helped my life in many ways, including doing the podcast. So that's what I recommend.
Yeah, I love that book too. I should mention that both Bob and I are involved in storytelling. If you're not familiar, a very good entryway for gamblers who want to learn more about this is an organization called The Moth, and they are at themoth.org, and they're on NPR, usually on the weekends, where you hear people get up from the audience and they tell true stories about their lives. So for you gamblers who are interested out there, if you just Google The Moth Josh Axelrad, Josh has been a guest on our show. He wrote the book Repeat Until Rich. And he has performed at The Moth, and he has a couple of gambling stories that are up there. if you want to listen to them. So
and they're good.
Yeah, yeah, they are. They're great stories. And I should also mention that we have something here in Las Vegas called the Las Vegas Story Slam, which is patterned after the Moth. And both Bob and I are involved very heavily in that. So it's in the process of changing venues, but maybe we'll mention once we know the new venues and the new dates, we'll mention that on the air. Anyway, my recommendation this week is a place called Rosati's Pizza. Growing up in Chicago, New Yorkers all think they do two things better than anywhere else, hot dogs and pizza.
And baseball.
Yes, and they're wrong about hot dogs and pizza. I don't know about baseball. But anyway, there is a family in Chicago named Rosati's. They have some restaurants there. And people think Chicago pizza, erroneously, is deep dish pizza. Growing up in Chicago, nobody I knew thought of pizza as deep dish pizza. That was something you maybe went out and ate once a year or something. Chicago pizza is thin crust, and Rosati's, they have one here in Las Vegas. It tastes just like the Rosati's pizza back in Chicago. And I don't know why it took me so long to actually go there, because I had known it was there for quite a while. But anyway, I thought it was great. It is on the corner of Warm Springs and Eastern, so if you want to try Chicago pizza, that's my recommendation for this week.
All right.
Okay, let's get back to some questions.
All right, first question's for you. What are the must-read books about advantage play?
You know, there aren't many. I mean, about card counting, there are many. But books that are about other than card counting, boy, I mean, there are James Grosjean's two books, Beyond Counting and Exhibit CAA. Both of them are very expensive. And really, they are not going to teach you how to do anything. They are going to be references for things once you know how to do them. There is another book called Advanced Tactics in Advantage Play, that will sort of tell you about advantage plays, but again, won't really tell you much about them other than that they exist. Now, maybe reading that will give you ideas. Once you know something exists, then you can go about finding out how to actually do it or beat it. But, you know, those are the only ones that come to mind off the top of my head.
Yeah, and we regularly get questions like, can you tell me which games at the X Casino are beatable by advantage players or something?
Yeah, the answer is probably all of them, but only under very specific conditions.
And the best plays we know about would not be the best plays any longer if we
announced them on the air, yeah.
Okay, next one's a question for me, and that would I recommend playing video poker to grow your bankroll? The answer is probably not. The heyday of video poker has largely gone. Yes, you can make money at video poker. There are a lot of games to learn. And so by the time you learn them, they will be different. Video poker is a grinded out affair. Yes, you hit royal flushes, rarely. You lose between royal flushes, and then you're flush for a while, and then you lose. So relatively few people are making significant money at video poker. The ones that do are doing things. They're traveling, and they go to an area and play and get and benefits from that area. And then they come back and they pick up those benefits. So it's a lot of traveling. Some are doing things that would might be called shady, which would be playing on 30 people's cards, which when discovered, which it usually is periodically, bad things happen to you in terms of you get flyered and the casino kicks you out and announces your name to other casinos.
And sometimes you get arrested and charged with all kinds of crazy BS. So,
Yeah, and some of that BS can be a nuisance to get out of. But so it can be done, but anything you do, including working at McDonald's, can be used to build your bankroll.
Yeah, you know, it actually reminds me a lot of internet gambling. Like, you know, I get the question periodically, gee, I found an internet casino where you can count cards. The money made, for the most part, at both internet casinos or video poker, it's not the video poker itself. It's the promotions that they're sending you in the mail, or in the case of internet casinos, it's the bonuses they give you.
Yes.
So the video poker is just the vehicle to get the bonus.
And it's a lot. Playing Jacks Are Better perfectly is probably a little bit harder than playing blackjack basic strategy perfectly. Learning to count high-low competently is going to be harder than learning Jacks Are Better. However, some casinos you play Jacks Are Better, some you play double bonus, some you play deuces wild, some you play super double bonus, some you play blah, blah, blah. Whereas in blackjack, mostly the strategies you use for one game apply to another. Yes, there's some differences. The difference between hitting or standing on soft 17 and doubling after split and not. So there are some adjustments to make to various rule changes. But for the most part, when you learn it, you know it for all the games. Whereas in video poker, knowing Jacks Are Better, you're like 20% of the way towards learning deuces wild.
There's, you know, the other thing I want to say is, now that you know that the money is in the promotions, in the mail, now you should start thinking about, how can I manipulate that system to get that money out of the mail with something other than video poker, right? You can play all kinds of games in the casino to generate that mail, and some of them may be much, much better options than video poker or blackjack.
Yeah, and some are easier to learn.
Yes, yeah. Oh, and the other thing, going back to the advantage play question.
Yes.
Comp City. So, yes, it's out of date. Yes, things have changed. But the basic concepts are what we're talking about right now, which is how to manipulate the system within the casino for them giving you stuff.
Okay, another question for Richard. What movies have you been in?
Oh, you know, I have not been in a lot of movies, and the parts that I had were small. You can go look on IMDb and find them. You know, I think I've directed more movies than I've acted in, so. And they don't show up very much.
Let me preempt the next listener question. What movies have you directed?
Yeah, well, you can go to IMDb. Yada, yada.
Okay. Richard, what would you consider an acceptable bankroll to start playing blackjack in casinos with?
You know, it depends on whether it's replenishable. But if you read Colin Jones' new book, 21st Century...
Card Counter.
Card Counter? Yeah, not 21st Century Blackjack. That's not the right book. 21st Century Card Counter. Which actually I should have put on my recommended, because I did like that book. He has interviews with lots of people who have gone out and made six figures playing blackjack within the last few years, and they have started with very little money. I mean, very. One of them, I think, $600, certainly $2,000. But again, those are replenishable bankrolls where if the guy lost it, he, you know, could save up another $2,000 from his job and keep going. So you don't need a lot to start, really.
And another thing about that particular book is the 12 or so people that he interviewed all had different routes. And so it could be that you're more like the guy they called Just Joe. It could be you're more like the guy he called Vagabond. Could be you're more like the guy he called...
Sassy Red. Yeah.
Yeah. So I know she was on our show. Was she in the book?
I know she was on. I think she was in the book, but I don't remember. Okay. There were a lot of people in that book.
Okay, good. Blackjack Discord. Somebody's heard you talk about it, Richard. Can't find the link. Can you help them?
First of all, if you heard me talk about it, the link was in the show notes. And the link will be in the show notes again on this episode. But if you use the Google and just Google Blackjack the Discord, it will take you to the site that'll sign you up for Blackjack the Discord.
Okay. This question is directed to me. Wants to know if I've heard of capping a machine. Apparently at this casino, a player has the ability to call over a slot tech and request them to cap the machine, which means the slot tech will lock the machine for the player. Screen will be blacked out and nobody will be allowed to play. Player that capped it has 2 hours to get back. This player never heard of such a thing, wants to know if how often this happens. And the answer is all the time. If you are a known regular player and you've been playing for a while, it's easy to get a machine capped. There are some casinos that will do during particular promotions or on certain over 100% machines that they'll sign saying, we're not going to cap these. But usually most machines are cappable if you've been playing them for a while. And in Vegas, frequently the players do not cap the machine because on some of the machines, which a lot of us play, there are more dogs than bones, meaning more players who want to play the machine than there are hours in the day to play them. And so we know that if people start capping them 2 hours at a time while they go eat, that's going to take out a lot of hours, playable hours in the day. So if you're playing the same machine over and over again at a casino, you get to know the regulars. Have a talk with them. Are you going to be leaving in the next hour or two? Could you take my number and call me and blah, blah, blah. Often it's done. If you have any social skills at all, you're usually able to take care of that. And it's better than capping. Okay, another one for you, Richard. Wants to know if you have any stories of the very first group of card counters that hasn't been published or published only in an obscure place.
Well, the first card counters were long before my time. There's one that comes to mind, a guy named Jess Markham, who was counting cards before Thorpe published his book. Actually, a guest on our show, Casey, his father was also counting cards before Thorpe published his book. But yeah, they were long before my time. Now, I believe there is a book about Jess Markham. But yeah. As for the rest of them, no, I don't have any stories because I didn't know them, and it was long before I was a tiny child.
Or maybe not so tiny, but not in the blackjack circle. Okay, somebody says Macau is full of 1-2-6s. Do you know of any player that's been banned from playing against the 1-2-6? I didn't know what this was, and I looked it up, and it's like a shuffle master machine, a continuous shuffle.
It's a continuous shuffle machine. So as the cards are dealt, after they're dealt, they go back into the back, and they get mixed back into the shoe. So you're kind of playing an infinite deck, sort of. Except most places, they deal maybe one deck before they stick them back in the shoe, or various amounts of cards. As Bob Nersessian has pointed out this week and last week, they bar you for anything or nothing here in Las Vegas. Do I know people barred from playing 1-2-6s? Of course, yes. I know people barred from playing roulette and craps and baccarat and slot machines.
Video poker.
And video poker and any other game you can think of in the casino. So yes, they absolutely bar people for playing 1-2-6s here in the United States. What their policy is in Macau, I have no idea.
Okay.
So. I should point out, not all of those people were playing with an itch. You know, so, and they bar people who aren't playing with an itch, just people who win too much money. So, but sometimes they bar people who play with an edge as well because they're caught up in the net.
Or as Bob Nersessian said last week, sometimes it's just a matter of being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah. Oh, and I know people who've been barred for looking like somebody else, where they were barred, you know, under the wrong name, like the person calls them some name who they're not. And it wasn't an alias. They just happened to look like some other guy.
Yes. Or you're playing at a table where some team members are doing something that the casino doesn't like, and the casino thinks you're part of that team.
Yep.
And can't really tell the difference, so their policy is better safe than sorry. You're out of here. Okay, this is from a blackjack player who played in Mississippi. He says, I've received intense blackjack heat at a place in Tunica, including trash talk from the dealer, also pit personnel, plus the dealer announcing the count at the beginning of each round. And later, another dealer who presumably was not good enough to deal seconds, shortchanging me on a blackjack playout. Done in such a brazen fashion that it was clearly on purpose. Lots of big losses at this particular place. On another occasion, a bathroom attendant in Biloxi told me without any prompting other than, how's the blackjack here? The blackjack attendant said, the cards come out of the shoes more randomly than in the pitch game. Actually, that's a bathroom attendant with a pretty good vocabulary. I'd really like to hear more about this. I'm so convinced that there's some house-sponsored cheating in Tunica and Biloxi that I've started to only play shoes there. Richard.
You know, people have worried about this all from the very beginning. I know players who would not play handheld games in Vegas because they were convinced they were being cheated. I just don't buy it. First of all, I really am suspect that you're a winning player if they are giving you heat but not barring you in Tunica. They have no qualms at all about backing people off in Tunica and even 86ing them. So the fact that they're not backing you off makes me suspect that you're actually a winning player. I do not think you're being cheated. I think that the dealer mispaying you was probably just incompetence. People make mistakes. I'm sorry. I just don't buy it. I don't think you're cheating. You're being cheated. And I wouldn't, you know, if I was going to go to an expert to check it out, it wouldn't be a bathroom attendant.
I agree. Another question for Richard. How do you fake losses? I've done the rat holing, but it's usually to test the PCs, and I do not know what he means by PCs. Maybe you do.
I think he means pit clerks.
When coloring up, many times they've said, oh, you have a black chip in your pocket. Sounds like he's not very good at rat holing.
Yes, it sure does. I mean, the other thing is if you're playing at a table by yourself or at a table where no one else is using black chips, then you can't get away with that. I do not want to go into too much detail on the air about this because it's still a very important move and, you know, I don't want to give too much away. So, all I can say is if you think about it from their point of view, if you are the pit boss, what would make it confusing to you as to where the chips went? And go from there.
Okay. So the next one is a long email, but I'm going to shorten it and simplify it. A guy was playing on a $15 table minimum, blackjack. Minimum bet he was making was 25, up to a few hundred. A big player comes in and starts betting much larger, starting at 100, getting up to two hands of 1,000. On the games where, when the count went sky high, the player who sent in the question said he jumped higher than he normally would for cover purposes, simply because he figured he was invisible next to the big player. Both the big player and he scored big that particular day. He wants to know, and neither one were barred. He wants to know if this was a smart move or he just got lucky this time.
Yeah, I think you got lucky this time. The fact that I think your idea is exactly wrong. The fact that the big player is on the table means that player, that table probably will be looked at and may be counted down. So you would have been much better off to move to a table next door or across the pit because they'd be busy watching the big player and not you. But if you're on the same table and now they run the software to count the table down, they'll very likely see that your bets are raising at the same time with the count as his. And the next time you go to that casino, you may get backed off. So, yeah, my advice would be to, when that big player hits a table, you want to go across the pit or to the next table and let the focus be on him and not on you.
Sounds right. On a recent show, Richard mentioned, he talked about keeping your name clean and working your network. I do not understand what he means. Can he please explain it again?
I'm not sure which part you don't understand. Keeping your name clean means don't get barred under your real name so that when they put you in the database, they don't have your real name. Play is a refusal. That's pretty simple. Working your network is exactly that. Just like any business, you have contacts within your business that you speak to about your business. And the more contacts you have, the better it is. Because you never know when someone's going to say, hey, there's a good game over here. Or, oh, don't go there. They just changed the rules and lowered the limits. Or whatever. So, yeah, pretty simple. Applies to any business, I think.
Okay. Here's another question. A player playing shoe games in Central America. Well, it's actually Dubuque, Iowa. That's Central America, isn't it?
Right.
His bankroll permits a maximum bet of 20 units. Is it better to play two hands of 10 units or one hand of 20?
So just kind of the rule of thumb is two-thirds. So if you can bet one hand of, let's say one hand of 100, then you could bet two hands of 65 with approximately the same variance. So you're making more money. And the other rule of thumb is if you're playing heads up, it's better to stick with one hand just because you're eating your own cards. But if there are other players at the table, then you're better off spreading to two hands. So those are just kind of very general rules of thumb. But again, if you want to take this seriously, you should get Casino Verite and you can just plug in these things and it'll give you all the answers.
Okay. Somebody sent me a question. Says he has a partner who's his mom. They play video poker with triple, double, bonus, triple play. 9-7, which happens to be 99.57 5% before you include in slot club and other benefits. They want to know if it's better to play dimes on only one machine or nickels on two side-by-side machines.
This sounds kind of like the video poker version of the last question.
It does. And first of all, if bankroll is a significant consideration, triple-double bonus is not the right game to be playing. For example, jacks are better has a variance of 19.5. Triple-double bonus has a variance of 94. It is significantly higher volatility. So the games return the same amount. So jacks are better is 99.54. This one's 99.57. If you're concerned about preserving your bankroll, you're probably playing the wrong game. Other than that, two games at nickels is a lower overall variance than one game at dimes. And we're still talking very low coin in per hour. And so even if the slot club does give you an advantage, we're talking about, 30 cents an hour advantage, 50 cents an hour advantage. Things like life get in the way. But it can be a lot of fun. It is really fun when you hit the four aces and a kicker, and it's kind of hell when you don't. Another player has been on a roughly two-hour losing streak to start off his blackjack career. He's had his game evaluated by a professional player, and he trains
Did you say 2 hours?
200 hours.
Oh, 200. Okay.
Did I skip that one little word?
Yeah.
And his play's been approved by both the professional player and Casino Verite. He's having trouble coping with the losses at this point, and he finds it difficult to continue on. Not only has a losing streak weighed on his morale, but has also put pressure on me financially. I've also been backed off from nearly every place I've ever played, excluding one place I'm playing right now that still takes the action. I was hoping for some words of encouragement or just some wisdom. Which one do you want to give, Richard? This losing streak has left me in a dark and lonely place. The feeling of going into a casino knowing I will probably win, but exiting a loser more often than not, is the most desperate and hopeless feeling.
I get it. I went through, a huge losing streak when I started. I've talked about it on the air many times, 160 hours, and I quit. And it was a friend, actually, who convinced me to give it another try. So 200 hours is a long time, and how you do on Casino Verite really is not the same as playing in a casino. So you might have your professional friend come test you again, and have him look at how big your spread is and all those kind of things, because depending on how big your spread is, you might have an edge, but your edge might be really small, which means your variance is going to take longer to, to get to the long run. So, but yeah, I don't know what to tell you. It's a very tough thing to go through those long losing streaks. So, finding a partner helps a lot. You get in more hours and you get there quicker, but, yeah, I don't know what else to tell you.
And if it keeps up, maybe you're just not cut out for this. A lot of people have to come to that realization after a while. They have to take honest assessment of their abilities. They assume, well, I've succeeded at most things in life. Surely I can succeed at this too. Sooner or later, you have to have guts to pull the plug if it continues not to work. All right, we want to thank you for joining us.
Thank Bob Nersessian.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flush, everybody. Good day.